chairs. There's a few chairs here. Depth guard, there's chairs here. Can we start? Close the door because it's too noisy from outside. Can you please sit down? Why bring chairs? We've too many chairs here. But we wouldn't mind having more chairpersons. Chairmen. Yeah. Useful if you brought your Gemara Kiddush. But so can you please close the door because it's noisy. I can't speak too loud. So the title for this shiur is A Shiur Dvar Aveira. There is no power of agency for sins. At the beginning of the second Kiddushin, we learn out the concept of shiurs by mitzvahs. So by mitzvahs, Kiddushin, Girushin, Wintim, and Kopim. Those are the sources that are brought at the beginning to show that a person can appoint an agent, not only in, as one does today, giving power of attorney in monetary matters to somebody else, which is acceptable all over the world, but you can also apply a power of attorney in certain ways for these mitzvot. So let me ask you this question. If you can appoint another person to perform the mitzvah in your place, you can get married by proxy in a certain way, give get through proxy, give tumah through proxy, do the slaughtering of the common Pesach through proxy. Why can't a person ask someone else, give me to conceal it? Time. So he appoints somebody else to be a shliach to put on tefillin. Well, let's go even further. There are so many mitzvahs that we have to fulfill from tzitzis. Somebody else can put on tefillin. Put on tzitzis for me. Or you can tell, you go further, say you go eat matzah for me on Seder night. I can't eat. Well, what's the answer?
Personal between you and Hashem, and you can't delegate
it
to anybody else. You have to.
So, where's the dividing line? And in fact, the whole point ein shliach l'dvar aveiro implies for dvar aveiro ein shliach, but for mitzvah there is a shliach. Therefore, you can appoint anyone to be a shliach to fulfill mitzvahs. You know, some people think, and there are certain communities where people say, well, you know, it's too difficult for me to come to tefillah, to come on Shabbos. So, you know, they go and appoint minyan men. And they think by giving a bit of money to a minyan man to make up the minyan and to daven for them, put the tefillin for them. So, it's power of agency.
It says, since there's shlichus for all actions. That means the one who sends somebody else, he is liable. Maybe the person himself is not liable. Or another answer, what aimer? Another answer which is given, no, chayev means something else. When it says the price is liable, there are two types of liabilities in the whole Torah. What are they? When it says chayev?
This world and next world.
Yeah. Put it this way, Dina Shamayim or Dina Adam. Could it be this world? But the punishment is not given by human courts. That's Dina Shamayim. Which means, throughout the Chumash also, and also in in the Torah Shabbat Peh, or the Mishnah, the Gemara, Chai, Bedin HaShemayim means it's a moral evil. And therefore morally it's liable. And we leave the judgment entirely to heaven. Because it's really a cause. It's Bedin Goromo. So, you know, the din is also, if a person causes damage somewhere else, he's Chai Bedin HaShemayim, before to be the order. That's the din of Goromo. It's not considered if you only indirectly do harm to someone else a certain way. There are frequent instances where the chiyuv is only din shamayim, but it's a groma. And obviously if a person pays money for somebody else to do something very sinful for him, then certainly, some people say it's even worse, but even if he orders him, whatever, if he orders him, go and do an evil act for me, it says, we see it clearly in what the Gemara says on the previous page, where it says that the Mishnah says, he who sends a flaming fire and puts in the hands of a deaf, dumb person, an insane person, or a minor, patur midin adam v'chai midin shemayim. Why? Because he caused it. He didn't do the action. The Shaita, Chedesh, forgotten, they did the evil action. But they are not responsible. They can't be punished because they're not Ba'onshin. So everyone obviously understands. A person is insane, deaf and dumb. You can't factor as a responsible human being. But Shaleach, you have to be Keach. But if he sends a fire in the hands of an adult, sensible person, then the pikechayah, the person is liable. But he should look after if he's not careful, and he causes the damage, then the agent should know it's his responsibility. Reuven appointed Shimon as an agent with a fire to go and take the fire in the street somewhere. And he said, look after him. Of course, you're supposed to look after him. I want to transport this torch or whatever to another place. And then, damage is caused. Who's got to pay? The one who is negligent. And what it said, why didn't we say, Shluchashur, Kamoisa? So the Gemara says, we say, from here we learn out, from this Mishnah, Ein Shliach Va'Avero. And what's the reason? Divra Rava Divra Talmud Mishonim. Do we listen to the teacher, Hashem, or do we listen to the Talmud? Everybody knows that you will be guilty if you're carrying a fire in the street and you don't look after it. The responsible person. Well, let's say today, it's happened today. A person gives his little boy, to give a practical example, he gives his boy over bar mitzvah, under bar mitzvah, over mitzvah, he gives an electric bicycle, and doesn't take and the father, whatever, buys it for him, and that boy goes and knocks down somebody. It's happening these days non-stop. It's a great, terrible situation. The pavements are more dangerous than the streets. Yeah. So who's responsible? If it's not a cotton anymore, then he's responsible. So he's liable. And he's not a chayr, he's not a shoyte. So the Khadivra, well, whom should listen to? Somebody go with a. He's got a person has to listen to Hashem. Hashem says you're responsible if you damage somebody else. Then there's a whole discussion, which we won't go into, it's a thorough discussion. What happens in the case of shoyge and so on? Now, many say that this divra talmud still remains at the conclusion, and many say no. Even instances where it doesn't apply, there's a gezerat hakatuv. So now going back to our Gemara concerning murder, where we find that machlok and tanakama, who says that the person who sends a person to murder is not liable. So there's various explanations. Shammai says he is liable. Because he does not agree with these derivations. V'ibot eim alon dorish. He does agree with him. And does agree ein shliach dva'aviro. So why does he say there is a shliach for someone to push someone to murder? So there's some more answers. You can say he doesn't it, but chayev means p'dinah shomayim. Means heavenly punishment. So from what I said, with Tanakama, he doesn't say there's heavenly punishment. He also said, so what is heavenly punishment? It's explicitly. There's no punishment of the courts. So the more answers, there are two types of heavenly punishment. Dina Rabba and Dina Zutta. If, according to the Tanakama, he is considered liable, but the person, not as liable as according to Shammai. Shammai says you're going to get a very heavy punishment for sending him. And the Tanakama says no. You can say after all, he knows quite well he's not allowed to murder. So I told him to murder. He's got his own conscience. And let's say, if you go according to the view, if you go into it more deeply, the voice of the conscience is really the voice of Hashem. As far as murder is concerned, everyone's got specks of conscience. It's a very important question. Another answer is, Shani Osam, the case of murder is different because it says explicitly, for the example of David HaMelech, Otto Arak, you the king, have murdered him with the sword of Bnei Ammon. I said, what do the others say if it's explicit? They say, it says, no, what do you mean? You said, interpret the verse differently. It says, Hare lecho kecherev bnei Ammon. It's not an action that you murdered him, but what you did is like the sword of the Ammonites. Just like you were not punished for the different murders which were made by the bnei Ammon. But also for Uriah Chiti not punished, they say you could interpret the discussion because Uriah was murdered by Malchut. Uriah, he rebelled against the king, didn't show him honor, therefore he deserved the death. So the halacha is not like Shammai. But there's a great deal we have to learn from this. Means according to Shammai, according to some versions in the Gemara, the person who sent someone else to murder is considered completely guilty. And so I'm going to bring you this. Where do we find this problem? We found all the trials of the Nazi criminals. Many of the Nazi criminals never killed anybody. It's well known, even those SS, Goldeiters and others, many of them did their best to try to get the capos. They said, okay, we'll let you live if you push the others in the gas chambers. Pushing the gas chamber was a certain death. That was the act of murder. And many of the capos, they had to make decisions. Friedel the Rabbonim said, you know, it's a very difficult question. If they're asked, you know. They'll say, we'll save your life if you'll go and push the others into the fire, into the gas chamber, or question then arises, what happens if you've got to push them into the pit and afterwards they will shoot them. So there were so many problems, both from a Jewish angle, and certainly from the point of criminality, they tried to excuse themselves many. I mean, some of them said, you know, we're only following orders. You know, when we went and killed people, it's this and that, we're following orders. So it doesn't make you guilty or not. So these are the basic questions. Certainly according to all the versions, there's Dina Shomayim, such instances. But is it also Dina Odom? So let me bring you the psak on this question. What do you think? What do you think?
No, because
let's hear what you say.
I think that just following orders is not, he's guilty. Because he's like the shiliach. Okay, someone's sending him to the fire. Now the capos that are pushing him into the fire, that's a different subject, because if he doesn't do that, he's going to lose his own life. So he really has no choice. mean, I don't know what the
halakha. Okay, so it has no choice. There's another debate.
I mean, he could
have no choice. People have choice.
I mean, okay, he had a choice that he could have not have done it and then risk being murdered himself.
That's right.
But he's being murdered himself.
I think in the course of some of the shiurim you've heard a certain view which at least applies to Jews. It's not so clear, maybe it doesn't apply to Gentiles, but it applies to Jews. What is it?
The three famous avarot that you can't do.
Which is what?
The murdered one.
How would you know?
Incest.
It's a big principle. You can save your life by transgressing every prohibition, but can you save your life by murdering?
No.
No? If somebody pushes you, let's say, if there's a non-Jew who pushes you, you don't do any action at all, who pushes you in such a way that he pushes you on top of someone else to get him into the gas chamber, well, you're not obligated to go and actively, if it's too difficult sometimes, risk your life. I mean, he's pushing you. But are you allowed to do an act of murder? Let's say you've got the choice either to say, in the camps they saw it in action. Some of the capos, some even survived as a result. They used all tricks and everything. They followed the Nazi orders in every respect, and they murdered fellow Jews. That's why it's so unpopular. Where do you find this already in Israel? Egyptians knew this procedure. Egyptians did that as well when they're persecuting the Jews. And the same applied in the camps. So people had to choose. Many Jews had to choose between life and death, and the Rabbonim said, if you really want to keep the mitzvahs, you're not allowed to do an action. And this question is, can you do an action which is more indirect? So to kill somebody else. But you know for sure it's going to be killed, but you're only a goyim for it. You know? Well, without going to the details now, in principle, this is the psak of the Rambam. So I'm going to bring you now. The Rosh and the Rambam is in Hilchos Ratzeiach. Someone who hints, who pays money to a criminal, yeah, a would-be person doesn't mind. I mean, there are plenty of criminals around who are asked to assassinate, and they make a lot of money from it. You'll assassinate so too. And it's a case of murder, to kill somebody else. Or he sent his servants, and they killed him. Or he forced the person and put him in front of the lion. He bound him, put him in front of the lion. And then the lion kills him. And also somebody kills himself. Each one of these is called a murderer. Killing himself is also a murderer. He's got the sin of murder in his hands. All these instances, because they're all causing. And therefore, we don't pass like Shammai. And therefore, he's still Chayv Misa B'Shammai. He'd be killed by Hashem. Chayv Misa might mean Misa B'Olam Hazeh. You have an early death soon. Or it might mean the din might be later. Uminay Shekinu Adin, from where do we know it? In chapter 9 of Bereshit. Shofech Dam Adam, Ba'adam Damo Yishafech. Why it says that? What do you mean? If a person spills the blood in the man, then his blood will be spilled. This is someone who commits suicide, not a shliach. Why do you win it? Suicide? Even if he doesn't kill anybody else, to commit suicide is a prohibition of the Torah. It's important to know this. Someone said, never know. If you're ever faced with such a terrible situation, someone's threatened to kill himself, you've got to use every, you've got to show them what's written in the Bible. It's strictly forbidden. Zorek atzmo. There's miyad kol chayayid rishenu. It says, I will demand it also from every beast. This, what does this speak about? There's a person who doesn't actually shoot him to death, or hack him to death. He goes and puts him into a lion's cage. He goes and puts him in front of a lion, in front of a wild beast. Miyad Adam, Miyad Ishachiv. What do you mean, man of his brother? That is the asocher achirim, someone who hires others, gives them money to murder someone. And all of this is drisha. Etimchem et rosh. That din masur Hashemayim. We leave that to Hashem. See? So this is. Okay. That's how the Rambam describes this, and it's certainly a very involved situation, and for Jews, compared to Gentiles as well. And this is the basis of understanding between the Shemayim. If it does anything more directly, then it's called not just the cause, but it's called actual murder. So this is one important question. So now let's come back to the sword. I'm not going to go now into the whole concept of derivations. For that you really have to enter more into details of the Gemara here and the Gemara elsewhere. But I am going to delve more deeply in the aspect of sword. Now we find in all Gemaras, even the law we've heard before, from where do we learn that you can desecrate, you can desecrate all mitzvahs of the Torah to save life, save your life? Where do we learn?
Live by the Torah.
So it says the mitzvahs should be done by chay b'hem. All the mitzvahs there to lengthen life. Yeah. Therefore, we've got to do our best always to lengthen life of every person under all circumstances. And if we see it's threatened, we have to desecrate all the mitzvahs of the Torah, except the religious persecution, which I'm not going to know. Except three cardinal sins. What are they?
Incest, murder, adultery, idolatry.
No, I'm not. If there are verses brought. You've got to love Hashem with your life. That means if you are being forced to actually worship an idol, and otherwise you'll be killed, you've got to let yourself be killed. And that's learned from loving Hashem with your life. And then there's another source from the Pasuk in the Chumash. The same applies if you're being forced to commit an act of incest or clear adultery, the same. But when it comes to our example, if there's a tyrant who says, either you kill this Jew or I'll kill you, like happened in the camps, yeah, let's say, if you want to push that person into the gas chamber, which is certainly death, then, you know, or they'll say, I want you to close the door, you close the door on the gas chamber, you lock it. You push in and lock it. So, if you don't want to do it, I'll kill you. Then what do you have to do?
Be killed.
As a Jew, in any case?
Passive. Be killed.
Yes. And how do we know that? Where is it written? Is it written anywhere?
Ten Commandments.
Where?
Law, Tzitzot.
Tzitzot. So, how do you know this is the, how do you know it applies to such a situation? In self-defense, you're allowed to act in self-defense, to kill somebody. Somebody comes to you and says, we're going to murder you, and he's got a knife in you, then you should kill him. That's the only way. Kill him first. Kill him if you come and said, kill him first.
Your blood is not redder than...
What is that? Your blood is not redder than your fellow man's blood. But that's a swara. What does what I mean? It's a moral teaching developed by the conscience. Yeah? And why do you think you're getting compared to the other? It's called a svara. What is a svara? So we see svara plays a very important part in the Torah. And what is svara? Svara is moral conscience. That life is sacred. And although we've got an apparently opposing rule, if a person's got a bottle of water and he's dying of thirst. And there's not much water there. You don't know what's going to happen next. And you almost feel that you're going to die. And there's another person traveling with you. And he doesn't have anything. You see he's dying away. What should you do? What should you do?
Your own water. Your own life comes first.
Then you think all that? Yeah?
You offer your fellow as yourself. Huh? Well,
I mean, Ben Mazzura says a good thing, huh? But what's the difference between that? If you don't know whose life is worth more, I've got enough water to keep me going for a little longer and maybe then we'll be safe. But if I halve it with him, both of us will surely die. And if you give it to him, then he'll have the same ethical question. He should drink it, that means he'll live and I'll die. So what should you do? What did Rabbi Akiva say? Your brother should live with you. But chayecha kodmin, your life comes first. If your life comes first, why shouldn't the couple say the same thing? What's the difference? Between these two models given in the Gemara.
The one's passive, the one's active.
One is active murder, and the other one really is the thirst that's killing. So therefore, you've got the duty to keep yourself alive. Hashem, some even say that the opponents of Rabbi Akiva is Ben Petura. And they say Ben Petura is an unusual phrase. What's Ben Petura? Petura is a term used in Talmudic language for a loose woman. You know, it's free for all, Petura. A loose woman. Who is referred to as the son of a loose woman? You know, what the non-Jews call the virgin birth. Virgin birth, what's a loose woman? She didn't come from virgin birth. Came from, it's obvious that this whole myth of virgin birth goes back to some form of loose woman. You know, to the father, whoever he was, so she went with another man. So this is Ben Petura. And Ben Petura, we know, went around preaching that if someone hits you on one cheek, show the other cheek. Yeah? Do not resist evil. You know, with anything evil. Don't if something happens to you, just give in. Which is not the way of the Torah. The Torah says your life comes first. So the question, as Doron said correctly, active murder, if someone says, you do the action, that means if, let's say, the Nazi, he goes and gets this, he takes hold of the capo, and the capo's holding a Jew, and then he takes hold of his body to push the other Jew into the gas chamber. Then this din doesn't apply. That's like the case of the water. Your life comes first. But do an active murder, it's forbidden. So now let us go over to the question of the Svarah, because this really is going to be my mention on Divrei Rav, Divrei Tam, Divrei Mishon. This concept, you've got to listen to the master and not to the disciple. In other words, listen to this instant master's reference to Hashem, who gives us moral teachings and decisions in halacha. You have to follow what Hashem says and not what any human being tells you. Question is, what's the idea of shir klali? I mean, when you learn Gemara, you're getting into it a bit. The truth is that often you don't see the forest because you just see the trees. You go in such detail in certain matters and you don't even know really what it means, how it fits in. The idea of a shir klali is also really the idea of Tosfos Rishonim. It's to recognize, I give a statement made in the Gemara, Divrei Chachomim, Ashirim b'makom echad, v'aniim b'makom echad. The words of the sages are rich in one place and poor in another place. So here we have an obvious, apparently an obvious svara of Divrei HaRav, and you want to understand what this means, the master and the servant. So we have to look at other places where this is mentioned. So it's mentioned in a Gemara in Sanhedrin in connection with the initial sin of mankind, which you all know about. You all know about the conversation that took place between the Nachash, which is Arum, the cunning and clever Nachash, the serpent, and Chava, and Adam, and Hashem. So, I'm running out of time now today. Maybe if you're interested, we'll carry on with this next time. But I'd like you all to turn, if you've got even whatever you've got, a Chumash Bereishis or a Bible, a Christian Bible, turn to chapter 2, Chumash. No, chapter 3 of the Chumash, sorry. Chapter 3 of the Chumash. It says, on Achash Haya Urum, begin with chapter 3. This serpent was cunning, clever. More than all the beasts of the field, which Hashem God had made. So he said to the woman, Avki Amayru, did God really say that you shouldn't eat from all the trees of the garden? So the woman said to the Nochash, we can eat from the trees of the garden. Verse 2. Verse 3. That from the fruit of the tree, which is in the middle of the garden, God said, don't eat from it, and don't touch it, because you might die. Just a minute. Did God say you shouldn't touch it? I mean, if you turn to chapter 2, that's what I have to also have in mind, chapter 2, that before the woman was created. So what does Hashem say to Adam? He says in chapter 2, verse 16, and the sages say this is really the verse that contains what we call the Noahide code, given to all human beings, but Adam HaRishon represents all human beings. There are many sources for this. Hashem, God said, and gave a command about man saying, you may eat from all the trees of the garden. It might even mean you should eat from all the trees of the garden. And this verse is explained in the Gemara Sanhedrin, or tradition. This verse contains the basis of the Noahide code. It's given to Adam HaRishon already. And from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you may not eat. Because the day when you eat from it, you will surely die. I'm not going now in detailed interpretation of this. It turned out they didn't really die, you might say. So I'll just give a simple interpretation. Sure die means that the initial situation of Gan Eden is basically a spiritual world. Even if it's connected with the physical world, but it's one pervaded entirely by spirituality on a different level than the life we have today. As is implied when it says afterwards, because of the sin of Adam and Eve, they were driven out from Gan Eden. That means Gan Eden is like a higher level, which will be resumed after the coming of the Mashiach. Anyway, then Hashem said, not good. Man should be alone. I'll make him a helpmeet opposite him. And then Hashem created all the different beings. And then he Then he created woman. But does it only says you mustn't eat from the tree. But she said you shouldn't touch it. Why did she say you shouldn't touch it? Why? What's the reason behind it? What did we learn from here also? No, Adam and Rishon, who'd heard the commandment. She hadn't heard the commandment. Only Adam heard it. When she came into the world, Adam told her about the commandment that applies to all of us. So in order to ensure you shouldn't eat from the tree, he said, don't even touch it. It was an addition by Adam and Rishon. So that's why she said that. Then the Nachash says to the woman, you're not going to die. And you're told to go and touch it and you'll see. You go on living like before. But she did. So you see, you're not going to die. Because God knows that on the day when you die, your eyes will be opened. You'll get experience. You'll become like God, who can, of course, also, he knows all about good and evil, a mixture of the two. Your eyes will be open. Then it says the woman saw the good for food, night. So then the old says like this. I've got a few minutes, so I'll just tell you the whole discussion. Gemara Sanhedrin, in a person, is accused of a crime. And he can't speak. It's a crime of, even a monetary crime, a crime, stealing or whatever. And difficult for him to defend himself. Then the best thing may also support his defense. If he gives some form of a defense, the person has the right to make a ta'ana on behalf of the accused. It applies also in a case of murder. The person is accused of murder, so of course he's very frightened. He's brought in front of the prosecutor, and it's difficult for him to to defend himself. Then the Bezdin have the permission. They hear from him which direction goes, and they can advise him. And they can even mention certain defenses in his favor. That's the whole discussion. But it's getting late. But if are you interested in this continuation?
Yes.
Is this the subject?
Yes.
So then I would like you for next week also to have a look. It's Sanhedrin, page 29b. If you have some art scroll. And have another look at Gemara there, and then there are many questions concerning the sin of Adam and Eve, all connected with this. What the claim that the claim the Nachash could have made was?
Or is it, in other words, you
if you want to say
the
why
master,
you me,
I'm not the master.
Why should I be punished? Afterwards, Hashem punished the three of them. Yeah. He punished them. If you look carefully in the text, you look carefully in the passage in the Chumash. In the Chumash, you'll see Hashem. He didn't start opening words of questions and why did you do it. No, straight away gave the punishment. The Gemara said, why could he knew quite well that the Nochos is cunning and could bring plenty of answers why he enticed Adam and Chava. And through his white eyes, because he followed the view. The Rabbi Talmud, the Rishon. What do you mean? I enticed them, but they should have listened to me. God spoke with you. Whom do you have to listen? Do you speak to the Creator? Do you speak to me? Hashem created me. I'm enticing you. It's true. But try to go against Hashem, but you should have listened to Hashem, not to me. Therefore, I don't deserve any punishment. So he claimed to Hashem his borach and said to Hashem, please, I'm entirely innocent. Now, the interesting thing is to take the Sugi in Sanhedrin more thoroughly. If you read through that, Rasko. Also read a bit the commentaries. The commentary of Rashi and Ramban, if you can, or those few verses concerning the primeval sin. And you can learn a lot about the questions we raised before, who's responsible in our life today for enticing people to sin or helping them to sin, or would you say people have their own conscience? Of course, these are very basic questions. You see, there are examples of people in the Nazi Holocaust period who went constantly according to their conscience, and they did not care, Jews and Gentiles. They followed their conscience against all odds, because they knew the conscience is the voice of God. We have to listen to it. And that's, we owe our lives to so many people of conscience, Jewish ones and non-Jewish ones. Because if not, the nochos that comes with it, which the power of nochos represents, the Yitzhara, if you go to it more deeply, it's a very fantastic connection between halacha and basic outlook upon moral issues of today. Today we're also faced with people who deny the conscience. And that's what exactly what Hitler Machshavo is saying. The reason why we have to destroy all the Jews, because they invented the conscience. Now there's a siyum, so I don't want you to miss it.
So that's the answer for the couple.
I'll give questions another time.
Okay.